I guess the first thing I wanted to open up with you is that when Mike wrote to you and said that we are interested in the developmental challenge and potential of what the climate chaos and crisis may be initiating in the human.
Oops. Wait a minute, let me turn
yeah.
off
the okay.
phone here. Okay. Yes. Yes, this is.
Yeah, what you yes. were you resonated with that, and I was wondering what was resonant? What interested you about that?
Well, much of the discussion for the last how many years, I don't know, about the climate challenge has been to struggle as much as we can and fight as hard as we can. Even the words were used in our country, fight climate change. Mm-hmm. And that we were to try as hard as we could with lowering emissions of CO2 and methane and acidification of the oceans, etc., to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is appealing to me greatly now are my observations, both within myself and those around me, that the best use of this climate change is not to get back to normal, but to use this collapsing. There is a collapse. I'm using the present participle verb, but instead of trying to rebuild what is being so challenged now, is to let the political economy that has produced this with its fuel and with its commitment to fossil fuel energy and its and the extraction of, well, the whole project, the whole corporate capitalist project. And I would include in that those economies, state economies that don't call themselves capitalist, but are competing with capitalism. So they end up having the same effect. Mm. To see the climate challenge as an avenue, if we could, if we can, of allowing the cause of climate chaos to crumble, and while we work our hardest to lower the emissions that are causing the global heating, warming, that we also move through this, and this there will be. There's no way that we can avoid a huge disruption now. It's gone too far.
Mm.
We'll be lucky to hold it to 1.5 Celsius, but that will mean also great migrations and suffering, hunger, death, losses. But we can move through and save ourselves and complex life forms on this earth as we construct together, let emerge for, be guided by a vision of a life-sustaining society.
Mm. Mm.
And the work I do and the work that reconnects also widely known as deep ecology work, we have called this the Great Turning. Mm-hmm. And that we have, for the last 40 years of the work, we have seen and acknowledged the unraveling of the industrial growth society. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember what the German phrase we use. You know, there's a book that came out only less than 2 years ago called Für das Leben ohne Warum, that I think I would like to refer to and make some reference to. Great. In the interview.
Great.
Because the first chapters, it's full of exercises, but the first four chapters give a very clear vision of our understanding of what the current situation allows us to see and hope for and work for. Mm-hmm. And while that has always been the case, now in these very dark times of what so much of it seeming unstoppable with the burning of the Amazon rainforest,
yeah,
and the dying, huge, growing dead zones in the oceans, and the fires sweeping the Arctic and California, where I live, and in Africa, Central Africa, and Indonesia. It looks like we're already getting pretty close to tipping points. Mm-hmm. But what we can, but not yet, and what we can do, I think, with greater energy, with greater goodwill, with greater sense of a mission and commitment to work to lower these, save what we can, and lower the emissions so that we can save room for life on Earth. And by that, I mean complex life forms. Mm-hmm. Hopefully complex enough for consciousness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there'll be much fewer people, but there'll be a chance for a life-sustaining economy, a non-lethal, non-toxic economy. And that vision among me and my students and the people I've been working with, and I see it in others across the country, gives a greater sense of energy, more energy, and a greater sense of more wholehearted purpose, that we're not just fighting the climate for the old powers to continue to tear us apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I find there's a way in which you're speaking that I want to kind of hone in on. You speak about we. And I think in that we is actually a profound shift that you're referring to, because you're saying, you know, we can do this, but the we is not simply an I, me here sitting in Frankfurt, or you in California. It is a deeper sense of our us as a collective humanity.
Oh. You're saying, excuse me.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, but your what you just said makes me weep. Because that is it. This is an evolutionary. It reminds me what you say, Elizabeth, that this is an evolutionary moment. That's what I want to begin with. That's what I want to emphasize. Mm-hmm. It's an evolutionary moment for life, mm-hmm. All life. It's not, but not the machine-driven, automatic-driven, corporations mm-hmm. that have gripped the world, the transnational and the state corporations that actually are to a very real extent on automatic and out of human control.
Right.
And that this moment, and I think, I hate to say it, but it's thanks to climate change that it's ghastly enough to shake us awake as we can be. We all suffer from the hyper-individualism
right.
of the last five centuries.
Mm.
We have all learned that have come to feel isolated, fearful, and competitive at the same time.
Right.
And that makes us very obedient to the corporate-driven governments
mm-hmm.
and the consumer society. So this is an evolution. Just your words. We must meet sometime, but just your words remind me. Of course, this is an evolutionary edge for the sake of life itself.
Mm-hmm. 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 And to connect, I have been thinking about how this isolated I sense that we have coddled and cultivated in beautiful ways, but also coddled and indulged in ways that are not healthy for ourselves or the world that we're in, that that somehow we need to get beyond thinking about my individual survival to how does complex life survive? How can I be an agent for complex life rather than simply for myself? And
beautiful. And
I think about that a lot.
Good. Yeah. And what I'm experiencing is that this is happening. It's not happening because of persuasion. Mm-hmm. That some people are mm-hmm. cleverer at presenting it in words, but that I sense it because we actually, it is a reality that we belong to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is a reality that we have an ache. We ache for a sense of solidarity.
Mm, wholeness.
And we're in the last stages, and I see, I work in the prison system too, and here, and I see how in our what we call correction facilities, we put people into solitary confinement.
Mm.
And this breaks my heart, but it's a mirror of our culture.
Right, right.
Our culture is putting us in solitary confinement.
Wow.
Our media are putting us, the military at putting us in solitary confinement in a way. And the lying here, the fake news, that also is putting us into a isolation tanks of not knowing what's real.
Right. Right, because the lack of truth shreds any kind of social bond.
Yeah, so then that make people feel at sea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but that's not the last. Mm. I am going to, I feel this more keenly just in the last weeks.
Mm.
As again, I see people. They come to my work and they get out of the fire zones, out of counties where of mandatory evacuation, where the electricity has been cut off, so not to endanger any dangers of the electric lines that have actually caused fires here. But they there is, and as we work with the idea of the great turning we can be part of, that we can, in this time, we're not going back to business as usual or life as usual or consumption as usual. Nobody, the people I see don't want that, but they feel, they look, and their voices, there is a zest in it. Mm. There's a sense of purpose.
Mm.
And there are ways, that are exciting ways to work with that.
Wonderful. I want to link what we're saying, what you were just saying, to you speak about, or you have since the 70s seen, because of this isolation of the self, you've worked in groups, worked with groups, and seen that as incredibly important, that we not be alone in that, in all of this, the nuclear, the fight against the pushing back against the nuclear energy, nuclear war, and of course now climate chaos. What do you see as the emergent capacities of humanness, of humanity, that are arising in the groups that you're working with? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, it arises on the one hand from recognizing how the suffering, their own suffering, recognizing their own lack, their own despair,
mm.
and their own isolation, and their own fear, all of which is in the culture of business as usual, is to be pathologized.
Mm-hmm.
And that has made the pharmaceutical industries, or what we call big pharma, exceedingly rich, because the government has, our culture, the mainstream culture, has succeeded in persuading so many in the healthcare field and in psychotherapy as well, that with people's depression and bleakness as they see the world disappear before their eyes, under their feet, and to assign, tell them they'll feel better with these antidepressants. So the pathologizing our grief for the world.
Mm.
It's been a sacred grief, for God's sake.
Mm.
It's grief when you lose your world, your lover, when you lose your sanity. So of course it makes us baffled and weak and half, and half asleep, half drugged.
Mm.
So there's that on the one hand, the liberation people find in groups where they can speak honestly, when they can hear the one voice they most need to hear, which is the voice within, their own voice. And when they hear that, and it matches what, and they hear it with the voices of others, this is like a, I've used the word sacred again, mm-hmm. or holy. It's a sacred confirmation that I belong somewhere. Mm. And that there's a sense of truth, the vitality of truth, and it makes your body feel alive, mm. and it makes your the tears in your eyes and the smiles, they come at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What, so waking up.
What is that voice?
I believe it is the voice of Earth.
Mm.
Because that's who we are.
Mm.
Every atom, every molecule, every cell in our body, there's nothing of our body or our mind that comes from anywhere else but this Earth, which Gott sei Dank, that right now in our culture, in our century, science is confirming that the Earth is a living system,
mm-hmm.
and it's growing. It's, as every living system does, a vast and complex consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're Earth, and we're waking up to speak for Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous thing to behold.
Yeah. Is that the initiation that we're in?
Is that the what?
Initiation that we're in.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're being initiated as Earth, and I think that this is the this is probably the hardest, or one of the hardest, certainly, maybe that life on Earth has ever faced,
mm-hmm.
what we're in now. And it's just thrilling to be part of it. I'm so grateful to be here.
Mm.
I want to keep on living as long as I can, because it is so beautiful to behold, and because it's so important, because if we can't evolve now, if we go back to sleep now, it's curtains.
Mm-hmm.
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 Mm-hmm. It's curtains for complex life forms.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is something in the Earth being that we are a part of, or in this living system, of course, that will give everything to live.
Yes. And that's what that's what I'm feeling.
Mm.
Now, I don't know what it's like in what other people are feeling. I only know what I feel, but I'm feeling that. And I look at others working with me, and I'm sensing that they're feeling it too.
Mm.
And I think the people in Extinction Rebellion are feeling it.
Mm.
A lot of them, maybe not all of them, but some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's. And it's a joyous thing. You cannot work for the Earth without joy, because you know why? It's because we are how do I put it? We are leaving the linear top-down view of reality that has gripped us during most of the patriarchal period.
Mm.
And we're moving into, by necessity, an understanding, or at least a sense of the reciprocity at the heart of the universe.
Mm. Mm.
If you act, you are met. If you act for Earth, you feel her strength right under you.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Are in your inside you. Mm-hmm. And if, just as when you act for the forest, you feel the forest, you know, that I've so often told the story of John Seed, the rainforest activist in Australia with whom I created the a Council of All Beings. Mm-hmm. And he had his life changed when in an action, when he was standing with his mates with in front of the trees, the last old growth forest in that part of from Gondwana land, that archaic forest, and they were being illegally logged and supported by the police, and there was all hell breaking loose, and they just stood there with their bodies, no weapons, nothing, just their bodies in front of the trees. And then suddenly he knew his true nature, who he really was, that it was not John Seed who was protecting the forest, but the forest who was protecting herself through mm-hmm. the humans that she had cradled into existence.
Mm,
well, the same thing now. And that's why I feel so, I can't stop smiling sometimes. I'm as appalled as I am, because it does feel like that wonderful in this hard sign that here come the troops, rank, the horses, mounted horses coming around the corner, and the last moment, just at the thing, the here comes help. Well, there is that. In this last moment, we are feeling who we really are, and we're not separate individuals so much as we are expressions, each one of us different, each one of us unrepeatable. But we are Earth as well. We are defenders of Earth, and she has enormous supplies of strength and wit and intelligence to support us. And even if we fail, it's been a wonderful, wonderful chapter.
Mm.
And then, you know, maybe some outer space archaeologists will come here some future moment and poke around and say, oh, once there was life, you can tell. But even if that's the future, this is a magnificent moment, because we are experiencing in our minds and in our bodies, particularly in our bodies, and I'm feeling it just sitting here, that we are living parts of a majestic living planet of such variety.
Mm.
And the story isn't over yet.
You're talking about a completely different way of thinking about ourselves as human beings.
I'm glad you recognize that. And I mean, yes, it is.
Mm.
Mm. And you know, let me just speak about Germany and the people around you there. I have found Germany a very wonderful place to work over the last four decades, because, and so I wonder why, you know, but I think one is that you're all affected in some ways of this great tradition of Naturphilosophie,
yeah.
With Goethe and Humboldt and Schelling and so many, that it's there and it's right there under the surface.
Mm.
So I think that there's and Goethean thinking is been picked up very strongly today in the West in Schumacher College in England teaches that, and so does the institution here, the California Institute of Integral Studies. where I, and it's not limited to that, because these are all active, interesting scholars who get read and publish, and it's so that I bet a study would show that this is a moment of rebirth of much of German realization of our exquisitely and intricately webbed with participation in nature, as nature.
Yeah, it's I think also the Second World War is another factor.
Yes, go on, speak.
Well, because I think that the Germans, unlike almost any other country on this planet, and particularly no developed Western country, has been forced to face their own inadequacy, their own
aggression. I have felt that strongly. I didn't know you were talking specifically about the Third Reich, but I have said more than once in my groups in Germany that I can have more trust in a people who know they produced a Hitler than in a people who imagine they never could, thinking about my own country and its stubborn insistence on its own innocence forever and ever.
Right, right. And sitting on top of genocide and slavery while doing so. One thing slightly at a different angle that I wanted to ask you is I often find it difficult to, and I think this is one of the daunting things about the moment, the kind of thing that can lead one to really doubt and wonder, and that is the relationship between us not as individuals, meaning acting alone, but the difference in disparity between small groups and almost pinpoints of different ways of being together, and the systems reality that we're in, or that has been enveloping the planet, the modern systems of the finance and global food and so on and so forth. How do you, I guess it's actually asking you, what is your model of change, if you will? That sounds terrible, but what have you learned about the surprising, unpredictable nature of change that gives you confidence?
Well, I think that change is, sometimes I think that the change is essentially a shift in identity, a shift from separate skin encapsulated individual to a larger identification, be it with a part of the natural world, or be it with an even larger living system like the earth, or even larger. Now I'm going to cry again, but my grandson, when he was 15, went on a outward bound journey. You know what I mean? And he was like going on a vision quest in the high Rockies in Colorado. And on his last solo vigil, he was alone high, where down below on the lower Rockies there were forest fires, and he was aware also of how in our family we were fighting fracking in California and dumping. And he laid back on the ground. It was a beautiful moonlit night. Everything was silver, and he was awash with the sense of beauty of it. And then he all that was assailing the earth weighed on him so heavily, as if it were just a ton on his heart and chest. And he lay down on the ground and just looked up at the sky. And then he saw how multi-layered it was.
Mm.
He saw how complex and how deep and outward extending and vast it is, and that, and complex, and a sense of its beauty and wonder and mystery, and it's somehow a sense of its intelligence too. And he had a deep realization that I belong to that. I'm part of that. And I'm sorry this planet may have to go and lose consciousness, but I'm still of this universe. And that recognition, he wrote, because he wrote about this to me afterwards, has really helped him even take part in environmental work, because he knows that he's really, really, really belonging to this universe. And if things don't go well here, that's a shame. That's too bad. But he still is a living part of this universe. Mm-hmm. Well, I will, if you want to include this in the interview, I have a section from the letter he wrote me. And indeed, that letter, when I was giving a talk a few months back at a wonderful high school here to the environmental students and their teachers, it was a big meeting. I read part of Julian's letter. Afterwards, we had a big picnic and other programs. More than one student came up to me and said, "You know, I've had that same experience."
Wow.
I had the same feeling.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. Mm.
That's part of the initiation happening itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that it's like we're in bigger hands than our own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which calls on trust.
Oh, you said the word. I was just, yeah, I love that too. And Vertrauen. I think I have come to feel, Elizabeth, that that is probably the most important response that we can have to rely on now.
Mm.
To work hard and to trust. Mm. Trust in life itself.
Mm-hmm.
We were brought to life, each one of us, and without our doing anything about it, brought into life. We can trust that. We were brought into life at this time, at this very dicey moment. we can trust. Not that it's going to be all roses, but just trust that it's okay and good to be here. Important to be.
And that our responses will come from that.
Right. That's right. And you don't have to know them. Just trust that they will come with whatever you're facing.
Mm. And that calls us to align our intention with that.
talking with you makes me, you know, I'm crying with happiness. Yeah. So put that in. I said that. you have to bring your comments in with mine, my dear. But that's a demonstration, isn't it? That's a demonstration that this is not the hour for the brilliant individual. It's a time for the collective voice, the interactive voice, for the choir, for the chorus.
Our deeper work here is all about that.
Oh, I must see. I don't know about your journal.
Do you read German?
Yes.
Okay, I'll send you a few. You have to give me your address, but I'll send you
some. Yes, and I will. I also want to read I translate Rilke too.
I saw that. I was really blown away by that.
Yeah, so let me read you the first poem of the first book of the Book of Hours when he was not in his very early 20s, and he wrote this. Just a second. I see it on the table. I'm going to get it. I have been reading this in English, as at so many gatherings in the last few weeks. So the English, our English, it goes like this. The hour is striking so close above me, so clear and sharp, that all my senses ring with it. I feel it now. There's a power in me to grasp and give shape to my world. I know that nothing has ever been real without my beholding it. All becoming has needed me. My looking ripens things, and they come toward me to meet and be met. So that's like a song to reciprocity.
And interbeing.
Exactly. And that's been a wonderful phrase that Thich Nhat Hanh coined. And another one we quote from him a lot in our work is when he said, when people asked him, what is the most important thing for us to do to heal the world, to serve the world? And they were wondering, I'm sure, whether just, you know, sit in contemplation or run for parliament. And said the most important thing is to hear within yourself the sounds of the earth crying. So that's a talk about shift in identity. To hear within yourself the sounds of the earth crying, and that's a sacred act, and that's because the sounds of the earth crying are in you. And how can they be in you except that you are, you are, you are Earth?
Oy, that makes me cry. That's beautiful. And it makes me cry because I know that's true.
Yes.
Or the part of me that cries knows that's true. Let's put it that way.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, do send me some. I'll give you my address.
Okay.
It's 2812.
Okay.
Cherry Street. Cherry like the fruit.
Okay.
Berkeley, 94705.
94705, California.
Yeah.
Okay, I will send you a bunch of magazines.
Oh, wonderful.
I think you'll like them. And I want to say also that you will have been and will be very much present with us when we do. Our organization also hosts a 24-hour vigil that we're doing in cooperation with the Zen Peacemakers.
And this, oh, good.
And this year it's called Belonging to Earth.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and we do it online, so we will have thousands, if we already have over 1,000 people signed up. And it's December 7th and 8th.
Oh, okay, you tell me about you, send you inform me about that.
Okay, I will give.
I can share it with people here.
Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Charles Eisenstein will be one of our guides, and we asked you and you weren't available, but your Anne got back to us and said that you weren't available, but we have a beautiful collection of people who will be guiding, and we will be meditating and deeply opening the space to this knowledge that we belong to Earth. We are Earth.
Yeah. Right. Good. This is a good moment for it. Yeah. It will help us do our climate work with a clearer vision.
Yeah. Not from a place of separation.
And not from getting back to normal.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Shall we go back on online just to, or back on the video just to say hello, goodbye?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let me. There.
Yeah.
Oh,
wonderful.
Thank you. Hug you.
the European on each cheek.
And also a bow.